and welcome to the Brand Strategy Podcast, a show created to equip you with the inspiration, encouragement, and clarity you need to build the brand of your dreams. I'm your host, Bonnie Bakhtiari, brand designer, strategist, and founder of The Illume Retreat. From sustainable strategy to heartfelt encouragement, each episode is designed to equip you with the tools you need to chase after your dreams. Because you deserve a brand that empowers you to do what you love, connects with your dream clients, and offers a deep sense of fulfillment along the way. So grab a cup of coffee and join me on this journey, won't you? Hi friends, welcome back to the Brand Strategy Podcast. In today's conversation, I am really excited to be chatting with professional licensed counselor and my big brother, Josh Berger, around a really interesting topic that I see pop up time and time again within the creative community. And that's all around defining your identity and creating a sense of balance as an entrepreneur. So Josh, thanks so much for hanging out with me on the show today. I'm so excited to be diving into this conversation with you.
You're welcome, Bonnie. Thanks for having me on. This is going to be fun.
I know. I'm excited. So let's kind of just dive on in. So last time you and I were chatting about this fear of success and this fear of failure. And what I really loved around that conversation was how you really challenged us to think about the root of where those fears were coming from and how at the core of both the fear of success and the fear of failure, we have fear. And I think that when I start to kind of like pull on that thread a little bit and think about what that fear looks like in my own life, I start to think about a lot of my relationship with fear and my relationship with different experiences. And when I think about that, I start to think through more of my identity and how I view myself, how I view myself as a person, as an entrepreneur, and then kind of what my relationship with those experiences might be. So, all that to say, how does knowing our identity help us in the battle of that fear, or does it even have a place within those battles? I would really love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah. So you bring up a great point about, okay, we have these fears and basically what does it actually do to diffuse those fears? How do we navigate that? The word aletheia, which is the counseling center I work at, and I'm the executive director in Houston, means out of the Greek, aletheia, which is truth revealed. And that's just not some kind of catchy mantra for us or a title. That for us is actually the way that we care for ourselves and for our clients is by seeing truth and truth revealed in our lives. So one of the things I am deeply passionate about, Bonnie, is helping people not just be able to come up with statements like you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you, like from Saturday Night Live and the old Stuart Smalley little videos, but it's actually being able to walk with people about who you were designed to be. What are your skills? What are your strengths? And what are your weaknesses? Both are equally important to know. And it's so easy for us, particularly as entrepreneurs, to get our identity, unfortunately, wrapped up into our performance and into our business's success. And often our business's success of the day or the week. We can become overly affected just by a good day or a good week, or even worse, by a bad day or a bad week. And so that's something that I find is so helpful is when you know your identity, when you know who you are, how you function, and how you thrive, it is so much easier to actually be able to dive in to winning over fears of success and failure and other things.
I love that. And I think, I mean, obviously, as an entrepreneur, I can so resonate with that easy pattern to fall into where you're tying your identity and in some cases your self-worth to the wins or the failures that you experience. And this is something that I also see within so many of my group coaching students, even some of my incredible branding clients. It can be really tricky to separate who we view ourselves as versus who we are as the entrepreneurs behind the work that we do. But when we start to kind of explore that idea a little bit more, like we throw around this term of identity a whole lot. Like we're talking about, you know, your identity as an entrepreneur, your identity as a person. What does identity actually mean? And what does it maybe not mean?
So I think identity is basically going down to the very rudimentary question of who are you? And that question of just those three simple words, who are you, is something that you can wrestle with, in my opinion, your entire life, and that you can gain new levels and new nuances and new ways of understanding how you are wired, whether it's something as simple as introversion versus extroversion versus something more profound, like, okay, I am very much a person that I thrive, Bonnie, as a shepherd, as a manager. Other people may hate that job of being able to work with people or kind of collaborate with a team. For me, that's what gets me up in the morning. What I find, I naturally just exhale and inhale and love and breathe those type of patterns of being able to interact with people and see microscopic growth that leads to macroscopic. And so that's something I think is very much, I'm not sure if there's a DNA for the shepherd gene, but if so, I have it. And that's something that I think is so important to know, particularly because when we're saying something complicated that is, like you said, it's a phrase we throw around of identity, we got to start very basic. So when I think identity, I think first, the question is answering who are you, and not the question of what do you do? So I'm sure you've seen this. If you go to a dinner party or you're hanging out with new people, one of the first questions you typically get asked is, oh, what do you do? And what they're asking is essentially, we don't know our own identity. So we're going to ask, are you a doctor? Are you a counselor? Are you an entrepreneur? Whatever it is, because our society overall is just really terrible at understanding our identities outside of performance.
That is so fascinating to me. And I like kind of what I perceive as sort of the more like everyday and almost kind of like more modern example of that kind of like dinner party or like networking kind of exchange and conversation is if you go on Instagram and you take a look at anyone's Instagram bio, we have it like those little sections like packed with as many like letters and emojis as we can that tell people quickly what we do. And we do it in a way to kind of like define who we are as business owners. So someone like a potential client can come to your Instagram, they can instantly see what kind of services you offer, what kind of people you work with, you know, maybe like a fun fact or two. And we put so much energy into crafting the perfect Instagram bio that speaks to what we perceive as like a big facet of our identity. But realistically, like I'm even thinking of my own Instagram bio. And when I look at the things that I have listed there, those are things that I do. Those are not things that quantify or define who I am as a person. Like if I were actually sharing an Instagram bio or like an introduction that focused on who I am as a person, it would look drastically differently from what I share on social media in that like tiny little section. So I think that a lot of people really, and it's almost kind of like a second nature thing. And I think you kind of like hit the nail on the head when you were talking about like our culture, our society doesn't do a great job of differentiating between who you are in the context of your accomplishments and who you are in the context of your identity. So if you're thinking about trying to figure out a little bit more of who you are and exploring what that identity can be for you, are there some questions we can ask ourselves? Maybe like some exercises we can do? How do we kind of like guide ourselves through that identity search?
So whenever you're starting the identity search, it can feel very overwhelming, or like, is Josh basically just going to tell me to go take a personality assessment? And there's a lot of great ones out there, but unfortunately, most of them are obviously not going to be able to have a real life person or someone that's known you for a long time sit down with you and walk you through it. That's just not the nature of the busy lifestyle that so many of us live. So here's a couple questions I would start with, and then actually have a visual for those of you that look through the podcast notes later that can kind of help with this journey. First question is that very simple one that's also very overwhelming of who are you? And the subset question to that after who are you is, who would you be if you lost everything? Mm-hmm. Who would you be if you lost both your arms, both your legs, if you went through a Job-like experience where so many of the things that we put our identities in was taken away of no kids, no family, no status, no followers on Instagram, no ability to even control so much of our own just basic needs, who would you still be? And that's a very detailed question, but it also helps free so much of what you're talking about, Bonnie, of performance or things that may come or may go. There's a wonderful poem by Rudyard Kipling from many years ago. It's called If. And it describes the scenario of a person, a young boy, basically being told by his father, when you can dine with kings and when you can eat with fools, when you can have everything go well in triumph and disaster, are you the same person? And I think that is really honing in a beautifully poetic way to the idea of you being you, regardless of the scenarios around you. So that kind of idea of, okay, if I take away my friends, if I take away my family, if I take away my job, if my entrepreneurship goes amazing and there's tons of success, or if it does lead towards something devastating, who am I apart from all of those labels and side pieces?
I love that idea. And I think as I'm kind of like over here, just listening and processing what that can look like in our lives, I start to kind of think through what it might look like or what it might feel like to really challenge yourself to dive into those kinds of questions. And actually, one of my sweet friends and one of my speakers at the Allure Retreat, Katie O'Selvage, guides attendees through a series of questions, essentially a series of clarity exercises that are very similar to those questions that you just shared, Josh, where she guides people through this process that she's cultivated called Assured and Well, that really challenges you to kind of strip away all the fluff and all of the things that we kind of hide behind, and like all of the accomplishments and like recognition that we love to kind of like revel in. And she really forces you in a very like tough love kind of way to focus more on, at the end of the day, who are you? Who do you want to be? And I think that over the past 5 years, I've had her teach at the Allure Retreat for past 5 years. And every year I've had her walk my attendees through that content and I walk through it with them. And every year it brings so much clarity. And so if you're listening and you're thinking, okay, Josh, those sound like some great questions, but that doesn't really sound fun. Like, I don't know if I really want to like sit down in the like 20 minutes I have to myself today when I'm not like, you know, picking up kids from school or answering client emails or like prepping for dinner. Like, I don't know if I really want to sit down and dive into those questions. But I can honestly say from experience, giving yourself the gift of asking those tough questions and being very honest with yourself in your responses will bring you so much clarity and will help you cultivate a deeper sense of self-awareness as you continue this identity search. So all that to say, Josh, I love that you share those questions. And something else actually that you shared with me when you and I were kind of talking about like what we wanted to potentially explore in today's conversation was this illustration of like something that you referred to as the identity structure. And friends, if you're tuning in today and you're like, what the heck is that? Don't worry. I'm going to include this in the show notes for today's episode so that you can take a look at this yourself. But Josh, would you mind explaining what an identity structure is and how it kind of factors into this conversation we're having?
Yeah. So an identity structure is basically an image of a house. So if you think of an old house, whether it's back in the Greek days where there are these massive pillars, or potentially if you're in the South and you have those wonderful white pillars like would sit out in Texas or Georgia, those kinds of things in the front house, it's basically a rough sketch of different facets of who we are as a person. So to be clear, when I ask about that question of nothing can be taken away or no one can take this thing away, I'm talking about the real core of who you are. I'm talking about your foundation, just like a foundation of a house. If a foundation is sound, if it is true and it can hold the weight, everything else in it works incredibly well. So the image that, Bonnie, you're going to take care of for people to be able to view is basically the idea of the different pillars. So I'm going to read them off, and each of them are basically a way that I actually have my clients kind of walk through some self-reflection of not just who they are and their core traits, whether it's a character trait or a strength or anything like that, but also these side traits. So the first one is the pillar of responsibilities and roles. So responsibilities and roles may include your work. It may include the volunteer things that you do or the ways that you continue to facilitate in your family or nonprofit or ministry or whatever it is. That would be a pillar of responsibilities and roles. The second pillar out of these is the idea of allies and heroes. So this is where hopefully family members are, dear friends, people that you've lived life with. And those are wonderful people that you want in your life. And then there's character as kind of the archway, the traits that you can continue to grow. And Bonnie, as you and I both know, when we get to see our clients continue to grow, you see that character is something that can really be developed. That's the reason why it's a doorway, is it's something that continues to open and you continue to mold, hopefully throughout the entire, your entire life and your entire career. Mm-hmm. Also, the history pillar is the next one. That one can be a little ambiguous, but I think for a lot of us, we have either big successes that we kind of put our identity on. So like the football player that caught the game-winning touchdown, or the person that's dealt with something very deeply traumatic that dealt with a lot of shame. We tend to catastrophize or catapult our successes and failures into little cores of our identity. And the last one is our genetics. So whether that's our actual DNA of being a Caucasian in his mid-30s, I can't change that. That's going to continue to be a part of who I am. And I may like that right now because I kind of like the age I am. I may not like that when I'm 65 or 75 or 85, as I've heard some people tend to not like that, or I could. But that's a part of my pillars. That's a part of my identity that is something that may be an asset or can be different. As anyone knows that's dealt with chronic illness, that would be the idea of your either physical health or mental health. And so the genetics pillar kind of becomes the catch-all of all these areas that are major aspects of us, but they are not our identity. Our mental health could dramatically increase or it could get a lot worse. And unfortunately, those are some of the seasons of life for many of us. So these pillars are all things that are those side attributes, because we don't want to minimize that. Obviously, if you have a wonderful marriage and great family, that is a huge benefit in your life. But pillars, Bonnie, make terrible foundations. And each of these things are something I actually have my clients write down. Man, what are your responsibilities? Who are your heroes? What is your history? What character traits do you possess? And what are your genetics, health, mental health, whatever it is? Because for so many of us, those things become our foundation. And just like Bonnie, if you put a pillar underneath a house and try to make that a foundation, it would turn to powder almost instantly. It would just turn to dust. Each of these traits are terrible ultimate foundations. They're not designed to be that. Pillar's a great pillar. It's not the cement foundation you need in your life.
So how do we separate? Because I'm thinking through, you know, someone who maybe is going through this exercise or looking at this visual for the first time, how do we challenge ourselves in a healthy way to kind of separate what we perceive as our identity, that foundation, from our pillars, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. So for most of us, we're going to try to make other things into our foundation. And again, remember that first question we asked of something that no one can take away, something that cannot be removed, is something that needs to be your foundation. For many people, this becomes their belief in their faith, or for some ability that they have, some trait, some goodness in humanity, something that is bigger than yourself, I find are usually the most successful, the most solid foundations. But for any of us, as we walk through this, we're going to be able to start asking, okay, is this something that can be taken away? My marriage, I love my wife and I've been married now for 9 wonderful years, but it could disappear. Tragedy could happen, a car wreck, all the things that we shudder about. And those are things where what we want is, of course, that'll hurt. Just like a pillar being removed would be very, very harmful and very hurtful. And I would grieve for years if something happened to anyone in my family. But it wouldn't have to mean that now I cease to exist. Mm-hmm. And we tend to make pillars our foundation, meaning we tend to almost feel like sometimes when we don't know who we're really designed to be, when we don't have a good sense of ourselves, we make other parts of us into the ultimate thing. It's part of the reason why, unfortunately, you see the dramatic thing of people becoming very depressed or even suicidal after their career goes down. Wall Street experienced that during the Great Depression, during the 2008 slide, where there were many people that they felt like they ceased to exist just when their stock went down, when there was a plummet. And I think many of us as entrepreneurs will almost experience that lurch. If we don't have a very secure identity, our identity becomes our career. It becomes our business.
That's so interesting to me. And I think I can definitely see so much truth, and I can kind of think through and what you're sharing, you know, past clients that I've worked with where, you know, they have not necessarily, you know, tied their successes or failures so closely to their identity as an entrepreneur that they, you know, went through heavy seasons of depression or things like that. But I've definitely seen how it impacts people. I mean, I've seen how even in the past, especially when I was first getting started in my business, kind of the ebb and flow of my successes or failures, I would feel like that would be tied to how I viewed myself. And I think that can be a really slippery slope where we start to believe that our value or our worth can be tied into, you know, those pillars or things like that. So I'd be curious, when you think through how we can kind of define value and worth, even when we might not see it innately, like what kind of encouragement would you share there? Or maybe what kind of example comes to mind when you think through that?
So two things come to mind. And one is, if this is starting to feel a little overwhelming or a heavy subject, it's best not to do it alone. There is so much hope, Bonnie, and there's so much life in being able to talk about knowing how you're wired and knowing that freedom of being able to see where you're gifted and where you're not, that I think this is an area where if you look at this and you're like, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to ask these questions, don't do it alone. One of my favorite things I'll have people do is ask a dear friend or a family member, hey, if you could describe me in a word or two, which words would you pick? What do you feel like are some of my best traits? And particularly dear friends that have that assertiveness, but also that love to be able to say things truthfully is so valuable in this process. Because so often we will see things in ourselves and we will miss other things, and they'll see things that we miss time and time again. That's, in my mind, one of the major blessings of community. So as we're looking at these traits, I try to help people be able to walk through, okay, this may feel overwhelming, but there is freedom here. There is life and an ability to better understand who you are and how you're wired to thrive, apart from any performance, but just who you are. So for example, getting very practical, I start with the question, Bonnie, of do you have value? Now, this is a principle that we've talked a little bit about, I know off the mic before, but it's the idea of, I believe that every single human being on the planet is treasure. I believe that every single person doesn't just have worth in the sense of, okay, everyone's valuable and we're all kind of snowflakes, but that we are actually made with immense value, immense worth. And treasure is something that can be kind of an archaic concept, but when we think about just the riches and glory of what, like when you walk into the Louvre in France and you see the Mona Lisa, that is treasure. That's a national treasure that has so much worth and so much value that there have been millions of dollars spent on this one piece of art in order to make sure that it stays well preserved, that it stays well kept, and that it is able to survive any level of other things that may be going on in the world around Paris, that one thing will be taken care of. And that's the idea of treasure, is if you believe, like I do, being a therapist, that people don't just have value, but they're really treasures, then you're going to start these questions, not just saying, okay, do I have any skills? But okay, what skills have I been given? What treasure aspects do I have? What are the things that I am uniquely gifted at? And then you're able to start from that strengths-based, that treasure-based mindset.
I think that is so encouraging to hear and also to be reminded of, because I think that it's really easy, especially for entrepreneurs, for people who are talented. I think that it's really easy for us to look at the areas where we just naturally shine bright, where we naturally excel, and kind of like diminish them or like not really take them very seriously. We kind of treat these parts of ourselves, these parts of who we are, not just the things that we do, but parts of who we are, as kind of like ordinary or commonplace. And I think that that's a really slippery slope, because we don't give ourselves the space to really see just how brightly we can shine. And I think that, Josh, like you were saying, that's where being able to lean on someone who knows you really intimately, or someone who you trust and you know they're going to be honest with you no matter what, and getting their input, even though that might be a bit of an uncomfortable practice at first to have other people say nice things about you, especially if you don't say nice things to yourself on a regular basis. Yeah, that can be uncomfortable, but they're honestly shining a light on some of the naturally bright parts of yourself that maybe you've just gotten used to kind of diminishing or pushing to the side or kind of viewing as ordinary. And Josh, you were kind of sharing this idea of viewing people and viewing ourselves as treasure. And you also kind of shared with me before we hopped on this interview, this idea that it's easy for us to view ourselves as like blankets, like just kind of ordinary, commonplace kinds of things when instead realistically we're treasures. And I think that that's a really powerful image to think through and how the way that we view ourselves, oftentimes we would never view other people in that way, right? Like we would never treat them as commonplace, but realistically, when we treat ourselves that way, we are unintentionally missing the opportunity to value ourselves in the way that we could be valued, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the links that I'll make sure is on the podcast notes afterwards is from this old 1990s Antiques Roadshow video of the idea of this blanket. And this really, really kind old man has basically brought this blanket that he thinks is probably worth very little, maybe $20, $30, something like that. And it's an old Navajo blanket. And I want everyone to kind of picture this image of just an old black and white blanket. And you can watch the YouTube video on here as this man brings it to an expert, right? And the expert, he's asking, "Sir, does this have any value?" And you see this expert on this little video. And like I said, the quality is not great. It's 1990s. You know how it goes. But this man, this expert, all of a sudden looks and starts to even shake. You can see his hands tremble. And he puts up the blanket. And you see this interview where this owner of this blanket is basically being told, "Sir, you thought this was just a basic blanket, just something you would even throw over the back of your chair. This is actually an original Navajo blanket." And long story short, it is not just valuable, it is priceless. The man approximates, Bonnie, that it's not worth $20 or $30, it's worth between $300,000 and $600,000. And in fact, the blanket later sells after the video was made for almost $1.6 million. Now, how many of us have felt like the blanket before any treasure was identified? How many of us have felt commonplace, or yes, we may have a couple things, we're nice, but we have nothing special. And yet whenever an expert, whenever someone that truly knows what they're talking about sees identity, sees truth and treasure in you, it changes everything. This gentleman on the stage basically starts crying because he realizes that what he always had was literally a national treasure, but he didn't know it. And Bonnie, so many of us, unfortunately, were not treated like treasure growing up or in previous relationships or even currently in the worlds that we live in. We're not treated as having value. We're treated as commonplace. But if your identity is something that is of immense value, that changes everything. And so that image is something I've walked with many clients, and I encourage people to click and watch the YouTube channel. It's quite a powerful video of a life changed based on the knowledge of the owner of seeing common to now treasure.
That is such a powerful image, just even sitting here and imagining that. And I've watched the YouTube clip, like I've seen his reaction, but even just like sitting here now and talking with you and hearing you kind of paint that picture for us, it's so powerful and it's so kind of humbling in a really good, challenging way, because it challenges us to kind of wrestle with the way we've been treating ourselves. And this is something that in our next conversation, next time, we're going to be talking through diffusing negative self-talk, navigating rejection, all of that great stuff. So more of kind of like the context of how to treat yourself when you are walking through things that aren't panning out the way you thought they would, or when you're walking through maybe some negative beliefs or thoughts about yourself that are on repeat in your mind. But all that to say, today, when we're talking about identity, I think that this is such a powerfully challenging metaphor and image for us to think through. But as we kind of think a little bit from how we're defining our value and our self-worth in regards to our identity, how do we kind of shift that back to this idea of performance, right? Because this is something that, yes, we've talked about before a little bit, but I want to kind of draw us back to that because I see so many people fall into this mindset where we are tying our identity into our performance based on like what we're able to do or what we're not able to do. And so what kind of encouragement would you share when someone is wrestling with separating their performance from their identity?
Well, I think performance is something that our entire society is very driven by. And this is something that's been true in America for many years, but it's not true in every culture. And so better recognizing someone's worth just by being, just by existing, I think is the contrast to performance. So if I'm an excellent therapist and I'm able to help my clients, do I now have a better identity? No, no, I'm the same person, whether my clients thrive or whether they really struggle or whether I do a great job today or a terrible job. My identity is intact. Performance is what happens in that day and that time frame. So I have clients very often start to walk through even just identifying, even just naming the ways that they notice their own emotions fluctuate based on certain value points. So that may be in terms of sales or in terms of praise or, God forbid, in terms of social media reviews. You feel great when you get the 5-star and you feel terrible when you get the 1-star, something like that. I first start with people on better differentiating. Okay, where are the sensitive points? Where are these spots that feel like you notice your emotions really start to get the better of you because of some type of pressure on your performance being brought into question? From there, then, exactly what we talked about, Bonnie, you circle back to, okay, but this is who I am. This is my identity. So me personally, I'm a shepherd. I'm someone that is calm in the storm, and I'm good at helping people be able to weather difficulties in life. Now, I can do that, Bonnie, whether I'm a therapist, a police officer, unemployed, retired, father of 3, or father of 20, whatever random state I'm in. Just picture random children of 20, but that's another side point. But I can do those things, Bonnie, no matter where I'm at, because those are gifts that I feel like I have, that I'm good at, and that I will be able to do, and I'll continue to do what, no matter what my vocation is. So you continue to circle back once you've identified a point of sensitivity where your performance is brought into question, and you start to kind of hold it with an open hands approach as you circle back to the truth of who you are.
That is such a good way to put it. I think that in my experience, I've seen so many clients wrestle with crafting a business or crafting an experience or a set of services that are so closely tied to who they are. Like, I think it's easy for us to think about if you are a solopreneur or if you started out as a solopreneur and you slowly built a team over the years. When you probably first started out, you were building your business around things that you naturally loved doing and skills that you naturally excelled at. And it's really easy for us to start to continually build more and more of our identities around that work that we do simply because we started from a place where we felt like we had a really strong connection to the kind of work we were doing, the way we were running our business and things like that. And I think that that's especially a slippery slope. I mean, I keep like identifying all these slippery slopes, but like in the context of this conversation around identity as an entrepreneur, there's so many areas where we can kind of get caught up. We can like overthink it. We can, you know, totally get off track, but like the consequences of that are high, right? Like it's dangerous for our self-worth. It's dangerous for our mental health when we choose to continually tie who we perceive ourselves to be into, you know, the number of Instagram followers we have or the title on your business card or how many sales you made in Q4. So instead, what I want us to do, I want us to be kind of thinking through a little bit more of what it would feel like and what it would look like to confidently be grounded in who you are as a person and then see how your business factors into that as just a subset of what you do, not who you are. And Josh, like you've been saying this the whole time today, but when I think through this and how I see this kind of manifesting within the creative entrepreneurial community, I see so many people who struggle with this idea of balance, of prioritization, of kind of choosing how much attention work gets versus how much attention life gets because they've kind of tied so much of their identity into the work that they're doing. So let's say right now, like we are encouraging people and kind of gently challenging them to think through how they can reframe their relationship with their identity and their work. So from your perspective, how do we start to kind of factor our identity into how we prioritize our roles and our choices? Or basically, how do we factor identity into how we pursue a sense of balance within our lives?
No, it's a great question and a good way to be able to make this very practical. So in my identity, I know that I have certain roles. And so there are certain things that can never be taken away, but there are still pillars that are deeply important. One of my top priorities in my life is my marriage. And so being able to actually identify that as, okay, my identity is as a man that is a shepherd that is calm in the storm. And one of the ways that I fill that out and that I live that out as being a husband to my wonderful wife, that is therefore an area that I'm going to make sure I prioritize. And balance can be such a misnomer or such a difficult thing because we kind of figure it out as maybe 50% work, 50% home life, or 33% working in a nonprofit or whatever it is. It feels like it needs to be equal. I think what actually helps people and can be so freeing, Bonnie, is whenever balance and prioritization are an idea of what are your priorities and how those trickle down. So kind of picture first on the list, highest up, is being able to care for my faith and then my marriage right after that and then my kids. And then somewhere around fourth is my career, is my job, the clients that I work with that I do very highly value, and then friends and nonprofits and ministries I do all kind of trickle down below that. What that can help do whenever you know your identity is then, Bonnie, it becomes a checklist. So is my marriage doing well and are my kids doing well? Okay, then if they are, then I can do a season of being busy. I can stay up later and work harder on being able to continue to go now onto the next thing on the checklist, career and clients and caring for them in a way that may go a little above and beyond. I've been blessed to have a wonderful family and wonderful kids. And so those are areas where I'm able to focus right now in a busy season of work. If, however, one of the other things higher up on the checklist, like my kids started to struggle, whether it was at school or in their own lives, emotionally, whatever it is, I'm going to need to kind of re-switch things around. And so, Bonnie, I know you're very passionate about being able to care for people well and being able to walk them through both the productive seasons and the hard times. And I would agree so deeply that there's going to be times when your family and everything is going to need the reprioritization of being much more the time commitment than your job. And there's going to be times when the job takes it. And so it's this back and forth of trickling down the priority list of who you are devoted to in each of those steps. But it is an order. And that's the beauty of it, is it will always stay. Instead of being haphazard and running around like a chicken with your head cut off, it'll be much more of, okay, how's my faith, my marriage, my family, and then my career and everything else.
I think that's such a great way to look at it. And honestly, I think that you and I kind of approach this idea of balance in a really similar way, where I would totally agree with you, like on the misnomer part. Like I do not think that, you know, quote unquote, work-life balance exists in the sense that we have been taught it exists. I think that, I know this is kind of like a polarizing topic for a lot of people, but like hear me out on this. I really believe that work-life balance is not a final destination where you like one day like magically wake up and you're like, ah, I'm here. Work-life balance. I've achieved it. It's not something that just like falls into place for you. It's something that changes. It's a continuous journey. And Josh, like you're saying, I believe that it changes given your season of life. And in some seasons where like, you know, family and relationships and the things that really matter to you are well cared for and well tended to, yes, those are seasons where you can hustle a little harder, or you can, you know, choose to stay in the office and work a little later versus, you know, maybe like leaving work at 5 and, you know, going on a date. I think that you get to choose what that kind of balance looks like, but it's important to be self-aware and honest with yourself in your given seasons of life so that you can make choices that are making good use of the resources you have available. So for example, when I look at this in my own life, if I'm going through a season where my relationships, where my personal life needs more of my time and my attention, I just simply do not have the emotional or mental capacity to give more to my business. That's going to be something where in that season, personal life comes first and the business gets what I have left over. Exactly. But then there are other seasons where maybe the business needs more, personal life is doing well. So I'm going to pour more of my available time and energy into the business and know that, you know, my supportive husband and my friends and family are going to be cheering me on as I go. And so I think that that's something where again, I know that balance is one of those topics where we all have a lot of opinions and thoughts on it. But realistically, if we're honest with ourselves, I think that when we look back on our experience and our journey and attempting to achieve balance, we'll see that there's a lot more ebb and flow. But approaching that ebb and flow from a place where you feel grounded in who you believe yourself to be, like you've been talking about, Josh, I think that that ebb and flow has more certainty to it. And it isn't kind of a process of like trial and error or just like throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks every now and then. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
Well, you're welcome. And I think you're absolutely right, Moni. This is something that is going to have those seasons, the ebb and flow. And then it's not haphazard, or it's not letting your calendar control you. It's you better navigating where you're at, how your family is, how your marriage is, your personal life, all of those things with a level of just intentionality and clarity that is so freeing.
I love that. That is right up my alley. okay, so what encouragement, just as we kind of like wrap up this conversation, because I know we've covered a lot of great stuff today, but I always love to ask this one question in every conversation I have here on the Brain Strategy Podcast. And that is, what is one encouragement that you would share with someone who is excited to start this journey, to get to know themselves better, to better explore their own identity? What kind of encouragement would you want to share to them as they are starting that journey?
Well, I got to be honest that I'm very excited to be able to talk with even just listeners and everything about the fact that they are treasure. So my encouragement would be letting people know you have value, that you are incredibly gifted in ways and ways that you may not even see yet. That's the part of being able to bring other people in. But the level of warmth and of connection that you can have whenever you see other people that speak truth into you and that see skills and traits that you may not even notice, or you've kind of been your own worst enemy. You've devalued yourself, which is something we'll talk about next time with the idea of navigating rejection or the negative self-talk. We're getting there. But it starts with this idea of this core truth of you are immensely valuable, that you are treasure, you are bought with a price, and that this is something that you will be able to continue to see play out, not because your business will just thrive, but because you are a wonderful person. So as you think through these things, going through it with that mentality of what worth am I discovering? It feels like uncovering buried treasure when you do this identity talk and when you walk with someone well through this process. So that would be my encouragement of have a lot of fun with it. It really is neat to discover so much more of who you were made to be.
That is such good encouragement. And that just puts a big smile on my face over here, because I think that it is such a powerful reminder that I know I need from time to time. I know other people need. And so I'm just so glad to hear that encouragement. So thanks for sharing that. And like you were saying, next time we're going to be talking about navigating rejection and how to diffuse negative self-talk. So this is a continued conversation that I am really excited to dive into and kind of explore more, because, you know, through this limited edition series that we've been doing on self-care and mental wellness for the entrepreneur, kind of like I sort of think of it as sort of business therapy. I think we've been slowly building from topic to topic. So first, starting with that fear of success or failure. Today, diving into identity, prioritization, balance, how you view yourself. Next time, talking through when things aren't quite going to plan, rejection, negative self-talk. And then from there in the future, we're going to dive into some more conversations about, okay, now that we've built this really solid foundation for yourself and how you're viewing yourself and how you're treating yourself, how can we allow that to pour out of you into external relationships? So that's going to be through things like navigating client relationships, difficult client relationships, exploring ways to manage stress, exploring ways to offer forgiveness to yourself and others as well. So really good conversations that are in store. But all that to say, If you want to head on over to brandstrategypodcast.com and click on the show notes for today's episode, I'm going to link to all of those good resources that Josh shared with you today. I'm going to have links to those illustrations and then also some additional helpful links if you want to learn more about partnering with a licensed professional counselor at Alethea to dive into more of this identity search and journey on your own. And of course, next time, be sure to join us as we talk through navigating rejection and diffusing negative self-talk as an entrepreneur. I know it's going to be such a great conversation. So Josh, thanks again for hanging out with me today. Thanks so much for sharing your experience and your wisdom on this topic. And I can't wait to dive into our next conversation so soon.
Thanks, Bonnie. It's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to the next one.
Thank you so much for joining me today, friend. Before you go, I would be so grateful to receive your feedback on the Brand Strategy Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode or the podcast in general has helped you grow your brand, I'd really appreciate it if you left us a review in iTunes. Your positive reviews enable the Brand Strategy Podcast to continue to grow and reach like-minded creatives just like you. Plus, I'll be randomly selecting a handful of lucky reviewers each month to receive a little thank you surprise for me in the mail. Thank you for all your support and encouragement as together we pursue building brands with purpose and intention. Until next time, I'm cheering you on from Waco.